Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kansas could be on the verge of a mega jackpot when it comes to oil and gas. The key, how much can be retrieved from something called the Mississippi Line Formation in south central Kansas. But even the search for huge deposits is transforming the state and making some Kansans rich. Energy companies are leasing drilling rights on millions of acres of land, and some towns are booming in the process. Today, a look at just what all this means and could mean for a state that has its fingers crossed. We'll talk to the mayor of one small town that is seeing itself reborn as a result of all the activity. And we'll look at the experiences of North Dakota undergoing its own boom. With us today, Steve Everly from the Kansas City Star. He wrote a long piece for the newspaper in December on all the developments in Kansas. Steve, always good to have you. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve.
Also with us is Todd Melby. He's an independent producer and journalist who's spent months covering the scene up in North Dakota. Todd, good morning to you as well. Let's start with what's going on in Kansas. Steve, this burgeoning oil boom that you describe in your story is like a scene out of a movie. Just how big a deal might this be for the state of Kansas?
Well, there's been some activity for the past year, and one of the big questions has been, how big will this be? There's still a question just how big it will be, but increasingly it's clear it's going to be significant, and potentially it's going to be a very big deal. There is an extraordinary amount of money that is flowing into the state, and some big bets are being made just in land leases alone, and that is for companies that have are going for drilling rights on the property in Kansas. They have spent an estimated $2 billion so far just in the state, and that's just for the leases.
And that's $2
billion. $2 billion. Mm-hmm. For the first time in at least 30 years, big oil has shown an interest in Kansas. Shell, and by that I mean the big oil company in this instance is Shell, and it has started to invest in the state, and it has leased about 700,000 acres, then it has started to drill. Another company, Sandridge Energy from Oklahoma, it now has budgeted $750 million for drilling expenses next year, or this year, mm-hmm. 2013. So some big bets are being made, and some early indications are this will be a very significant deal.
I was going to say these companies wouldn't be spending that much money unless they were fairly confident that there's some gold at the end of this rainbow for them.
And in that regard, Kansas has something that some states don't, and that there's been a oil industry in the state for a long time, and there's been a lot of drilling down into this Mississippian line formation for a long time. And these were vertical wells that got some oil out, but not a tremendous amount. But what they did get was a lot of evidence and information about just what was down there. And these oil companies have been pouring over that information. And that has that was one reason why there is a considerable amount of confidence that they're going to make this work. As Shell Oil, Shell Oil Vice President at a Hutchison conference in December said, "This is for real." The question is still just how big it is, but like I said, increasingly it is a big deal.
Steve Everly, in 2013, are we going to know just how big a deal this is?
We should. It may be the end of the year, but before we know for sure. But they're now drilling at various spots in Kansas, and one of the big questions is how, if this Mississippian line formation is, how much of it is going to produce oil and natural gas, and how uniform it will be. They already know it's going to be a little spottier than, say, what North Dakota is, but there are early indications that the farther they go into it, they're still getting some fairly good spots. And a big part of this learning curve that oil companies are now undergoing in Kansas is being able to pick those good spots and increase the chances that wherever they're drilling, they're going to find oil and natural gas.
I was going to say, just potentially give us some context here, Steve. How much oil and gas might there be in Kansas, and how does it compare to other big oil-producing states like Texas or where Todd Melby is up in North Dakota?
Right.
What does Kansas have? How might it compare to those other states?
Well, one of the issues in coming up with that number, we're still early, and reserve numbers are still very tentative. A number that is given for the Mississippian line, which also includes some territory in Oklahoma, is around 3.5 billion barrels of oil and natural gas. And natural gas is usually figured in cubic feet, but they transform that into barrels so that you can come up with a number. Now, by comparison, and Todd can certainly speak to this more than I can, but you see figures considerably more than that in North Dakota. I think for the Bakken Formation, which is under North Dakota, you see as much as 12 billion barrels. But one thing for sure, it's not going to be as big a deal as North Dakota, but you can still be far less than North Dakota and have a very significant find.
Because North Dakota has been extraordinary.
Yes, it is extraordinary.
Well, yeah. Speaking of North Dakota, let's bring Todd Melby into our conversation here. He's been covering the energy scene in North Dakota for some months now. How are drillers up in North Dakota getting the oil up there, Todd, and just how much is there?
There's a lot of oil in North Dakota. This has been a huge, huge boon for the state, and North Dakota is now the number two oil producer nationwide,
behind Texas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so in the past year, you know, they've surpassed Alaska and Oklahoma and other states. And so now North Dakota is number two, and for the most part, North Dakota has really, really embraced this boom and is super happy with the jobs it's brought to the western part of the state. And, of course, the big oil field money just for the people that are doing it, and also for the revenues when it comes to the state of North Dakota, which has a huge budget surplus.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. I mean, why does North Dakota, Todd, have so much oil? What's happened there geologically speaking that's brought all that oil underneath that state?
Well, North Dakota's had oil since, probably since the beginning of time, but it was first discovered in 1951, was the first oil that was drilled in North Dakota. Then there was a mini boom in the 80s, and then it went dormant. And then a guy by the name of Harold Hamm, who's the CEO of Continental Oil out of Oklahoma, he took a big bet on the Bakken, and the Bakken is what the name of the formation is in North Dakota. And he bet big, and he figured out how to drill horizontally and with fracking to get the oil out of the Bakken. And Continental Oil has about, I think, 25%, give or take, of what's coming out of the Bakken, and it's made Harold Hamm one of the biggest billionaires in the country.
Hmm. Why did he bet so big? What made him so confident there was that much oil underneath North Dakota, Todd?
That's a good question. I don't know if he's articulated that, but he thought that the USGS estimate from the U.S. Geological Service was way underestimated as far as what it thought was recoverable oil out of the Bakken. The estimate from the USGS some years ago was, I think, in the 4 to 6 billion barrel range, and Harold Hamm thought it was in the 24 billion barrel range.
Mm-hmm.
And since Hamm took the big bet and won, other oil companies have come in and drilled as well. And right now you really can't go wrong in the Bakken. I mean, oil companies go in and they've got a 99% chance of hitting something.
Wow.
if they hit these core counties in the West.
This is not a geology show, but I still don't get it, Todd. Why is there so much oil in North Dakota? Apparently, there could be a whole bunch in Kansas. Why isn't there just as much oil in the states in between, like in Iowa and maybe in Minnesota and South Dakota? What do we know about that?
I think it's just where the oil formation is. I mean, it is in this. There's two formations in the North Dakota, Montana, Western South Dakota region, and also up in Canada in Saskatchewan. So that whole area is called the Bakken, and also the Three Forks found formations. And so there's just a lot of oil there, and they figured out how to get it out. And it you know, as long as the oil prices stay high worldwide, most people think that this boom is going to go on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
in western North Dakota.
You know, you've done some terrific multimedia pieces, and we'll put a link on our website at kcur.org so folks can go on our website and take a look at exactly what's happened in North Dakota. And you make the point, you already have here this morning, that all of this has absolutely transformed North Dakota. Talk to us about that. How does the North Dakota of, say, 15 or 20 years ago compare with the western North Dakota that you see out there today?
Well, I'm from western North Dakota. I graduated from high school in Hettinger, North Dakota in 1979. And Hettinger is not part of the Bakken boom, but it's about 3 hours south of the Bakken boom. And, you know, my high school graduating class was 66. And, you know, these little towns are sort of shriveling up and there weren't any jobs as, you know, the agriculture business got bigger and bigger and bigger and needed fewer people. And now it's just the opposite. You know, the towns right around Williston, North Dakota, which is the biggest oil boom town around. But there are these little towns of like 1,000, 1,200 people that have now exploded to 5,000, 6,000 people. And that's caused lots of opportunities for some people and lots of disgruntlement and disappointment about the changing way of life and in the western part of the state.
Yeah, and maybe one way that changing way of life is best seen is in one of your pieces, because you had some footage of a traffic jam in one small town up there in Watford. Do I have that right? Watford City?
Yeah, it's called Watford City.
Watford City, I'm sorry. And you see the traffic jam there. Describe that to us, because, again, for a typical small town in Kansas or North Dakota, this is like something out of a science fiction novel here.
It is. It really is. You know, it used to be in western North Dakota, you could just drive, and it would be you and maybe one other car on the highway or one other pickup. And now, if you get into oil country, it's big truck after big truck after big truck after big truck. It just goes on. And you sort of fear for your life as just a regular guy in an SUV. I mean, you really do. And it's an SUV. I mean, I take my SUV to the city, and it feels big. I take it out to western North Dakota, and it feels like a smart car. I mean, it's that much of a difference.
And literally, one of your pieces, Todd, showed the line of cars in Watford City extending from a traffic light really almost as far as the eye could see down the road, a single-file column, just breathtaking.
Yeah, that town never used to have a traffic light. That town, you know, you just go down Main Street through the town and go on your way. And now they had this truck detour, and so, you know, the trucks just line up for miles and miles waiting for that light to turn. And if you've got one big truck that's hauling like a mobile home or a huge oil tank, and it can't go particularly fast, it just sort of clogs everything up, and you know, you see everything on these trucks. And so that particular piece that you're referring to is, I'd met a guy from Spearfish, South Dakota, who used to be an L.A. cop. He retired to Spearfish for, you know, the quiet life, and then decided to open up this fire-retardant clothing store with a buddy of his, mm-hmm. and they set up a temporary store sort of where this highway turns. And so he was able to sort of see all these trucks go by, and he said he thought he'd seen everything in L.A. rush hour traffic, and then he got to North Dakota, and he saw more.
Well, what did the police officer tell you about all this?
Well, the police departments and the sheriff's departments, they've had to hire more people. And so, you know, there's a little rural sheriff's department that used to have 4 people, and now they've got 11. And the rates of aggravated assaults have gone up. You know, guys getting in fights outside of bars is mainly what sheriffs have told me. The rapes have gone up, not huge, but they have gone up. I mean, this is a part of the country where there was almost never a rape mm-hmm. or never a murder, and now you've got those sorts of things happening as well. Mm-hmm. And then there was also a school teacher from Sydney, Montana, who was kidnapped and murdered, and that really scared people. She was jogging, and she was jogging in North Dakota, and she was abducted by 2 guys who came up to look for work. And, of course, that sort of thing just had never happened in western North Dakota, and it really freaked people out. And so concealed carry permits in the West really went up.
We're talking, if you're just joining us here on Up to Date, about the potential for an oil boom and natural gas boom in Kansas. We're also talking about the experiences of oil boomers in North Dakota. Todd, so how do the longtime residents of western North Dakota feel about all this? Because certainly this has to be rubbing a lot of people the wrong way who have been there for a long time and have chosen western North Dakota as a way of life and a place to raise kids in a place that now is a very different place than what it's become today.
Yeah, I think it's very mixed. I think people who are older, say in their 50s and their 60s, don't like it because they're used to seeing everybody that they know. Like when they see a truck goes by, they know that that's Donnie, you know. And now they see trucks go by and they don't know who are in those trucks. And so some of those folks have moved or, you know, sold their houses and cashed in and moved far away from the boom. And some have stuck around and just don't like it. But then younger people, like people in their 20s, like guys in their 20s, and maybe even the 30s, are, you know, getting those high-paying oil-filled gigs. And they're making $120,000, $140,000 a year. I mean, these are really well-paying jobs. Hmm. But so to me, it seems like based on the people I talk to, it seems like it's almost based on age.
So there's a lot of cash flowing around North Dakota that wasn't there a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, the state has a $1.6 billion budget surplus, and a lot of that is because of...
$1.6 billion?
Billion, with a B. Mm. That's right. And a lot of that is because of individual income tax revenue that the state is giving. So people are making more money, so they're paying more in income tax, and it's also because, of course, the tax on the oil. But people are making more money. You know, the counties in the West, some of them have skyrocketed up to be among the richer countries in the nation.
What's the state going to do with all that money and with all that surplus cash, $1.6 billion? That's a lot of money in this day and age.
Well, right now, of the oil revenue, about 17% of it is sent back to Western counties to deal with the infrastructure needs. I mean, sort of everything is needed. I mean, in an oil boom, if it's a huge boom, you need everything. You need roads, you need better sewers, you need better electricity grids, you need housing for school teachers, you need housing for police officers, you know, because you can't pay a police officer what you'd pay an oil worker, and the cost of housing has gone up really, really high.
And the housing that is there, you show aerial pictures of some of this. There are a lot of temporary quarters that are up there right now, trailers, right?
Exactly, right. So there's really a mix of things. There's something that people call man camps, which the companies that own them, they like to call them crew camps, but colloquially they're known as man camps. And those are, I know it sounds exotic,
I'm getting the impression here, yeah.
Yeah. So it's mostly guys that have these oil-filled jobs, not exclusively, but mostly. Probably the ratio is, you know, 9 out of 10 workers are men. Hence the name man camps. And so those would be like the nicer places. They're sort of temporary quarters that are kind of hooked together. So like if you work for Halliburton or Baker Hughes or somebody, you might live in one of those temporarily. But then, as you say, there's these temporary places that pop up. There's, you know, people bring their RVs and mobile homes up and they park them in farm fields, or they sort of cluster them together on some farmer's land. The city of Williston had to ban RVs from city limits because there were just so many of them. At the beginning of the boom, people were just parking their RVs in the Walmart parking lot in Williston, North Dakota. Hmm. And that's something you can do at Walmarts around the country, and Walmart doesn't seem to care. And they didn't seem to care at first in Williston, but then they banned them. So there's a whole – that's probably the biggest challenge new workers face is where do they sleep?
That's the voice of Todd Melby. He's an independent producer and journalist who has spent months covering the oil boom scene up in North Dakota. What has all this meant for employment up there, Todd? Give us a picture of how many workers are up there and how many and what the totals are these days.
Well, you know, the lower paying jobs, it's really tough to find people for that work. The higher paying jobs are, of course, easy to fill because everybody wants those.
So, lower-paying jobs like what?
That'd be like working at Walmart or working at a fast food place or even working at the U.S. Post Office. Right now, the U.S. Postal Service that's in charge of Western North Dakota, they're getting a lot of crap because mail service has been really slow, and they say it's been slow because they can't hire people to do the work, and so people aren't getting their mail and businesses aren't getting their mail. I don't know if they're not getting their mail period or just getting it slower, but that's a pretty good indication that that employment is super high and unemployment is super low. It's less than 1% in Western North Dakota.
So workers are needed up there for all kinds of things, it sounds like.
Yeah, everything from your from your traditional jobs at service industry jobs to oil field jobs to now, of course, teachers and police officers. It's sort of like I mean, once an oil boom like this happens, it sort of has this huge ripple effect where pretty soon you need everybody. You need more doctors. You need more nurses. You basically need more of everything.
You know, give us a sense of what some of these high-paying jobs are, because, again, you have some footage that you've produced. Again, we'll have it on our website, kcur.org, that shows these oil workers doing what they do. And it looked like not only tough work, but fairly dangerous work, too. Describe that to us.
Sure, yeah. Your average drilling rig job is hands-on, and you're up there, you know, putting pipe into the hole. So there's a lot of, you know, guys in hard hats and safety glasses with oil splattered on their faces. It's a tough, rough job. And as the guys in the video said, you know, you either do it, or if you can't, you go home. And so there are all kinds of names for these jobs on the rigs. You know, they're very colorful names, like roustabout, worm, derrick hand, etc.
Yeah,
but then a lot of jobs are truck driving jobs, because you need to get the oil to the rail to transfer facilities. So right now the pipeline infrastructure isn't there because the boom has happened so fast. So most of the oil is most of the crude is taken to these oil to rail transfer facilities and then taken out of the Bakken in rail cars to refineries across the country.
You know, Steve Everly from The Star, who's reported about what's going on in South Central Kansas for the newspaper. You know, you've talked in your story about, we're sitting here talking about the amount of money sloshing around North Dakota. There's a lot of money sloshing around South Central Kansas now that certainly wasn't there a short time ago. Some landowners already are making money off this deal by leasing the drilling rights on their land. How much do landowners make off deals like this, and how eager are they to make these deals?
Well, the numbers are over the place, but it seems the one I've picked up most frequently has been around $300 an acre, which gives the rights. And then if oil is produced, they get a percentage of that. It's about an eighth of that. But the prices go up beyond that. I mean, there are some landowners have gotten as much as $2,000 or more per acre. Those are some of the better sites, but it's a lot of cash, and there are a lot of bankers in South Central Kansas that have farmers coming up and paying off their loans now, and essentially being debt-free. That's kind of the first wave of this in Kansas. Now we're starting to see some of the drilling. We're starting to see just a little bit of what North Dakota is seeing as these man camps, which, by the way, Kansas officials are very insistent on calling those crew camps, too. They want to, and
a little intimidating, and the idea of man camps.
That's tough. And you got, in fact, you got some small towns that are already kind of dealing with this issue. They are just as they did in this North Dakota town that Todd mentioned. They have banned RVs, except for a couple of places, and they don't want these camps in town. But the mixed feeling is also in Kansas. These small towns were told just a few years ago that they were dying, and they were going to, you know, and they were, there wasn't going to be anything left of them in just a few years, losing population and just kind of going away. They are really seeing this as a lifeline. As a mayor of one town told me, we're praying for growing pains. So
something they hadn't experienced in years and years and years.
Exactly. And so they're pretty eager about this. Especially at the very southern part of the state, where most of the drilling has been done so far, you're starting to see, hotels full, some motels being built now, restaurants full. So you're really starting to see some of this activity, which the University of Kansas says is going to keep growing. And in about a decade, the income, which includes wages and royalties that landowners are getting and whatever, could amount to about $1 billion every quarter. So it could be a very significant contribution to the state.
And, Steve, that's if, and that word underlined several times, if this boom turns out to be what it's being billed as which is a boom itself.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned initially, there is growing confidence that this is going to be very significant. Just the full dimensions of it are still being settled.
Well, let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the potential for a huge oil and gas boom in South Central Kansas. And we'll turn our conversation to the mayor of one small town that's experiencing at least a mini boom so far as the exploration for oil and gas continues. And we'll also continue our conversation with Todd Melby about what's been going on up in North Dakota. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're talking today about the potential for Kansas being on the verge of a mega jackpot when it comes to oil and gas. The key, very much, how much can be retrieved from something called the Mississippi Line Formation in South Central Kansas. We're visiting with Steve Everly from the Kansas City Star, who's covered this issue for the newspaper. And also with us, Todd Melby. He's an independent producer and journalist who has spent several months covering the scene in North Dakota. He's a North Dakota native. But joining us now to talk about the impact of Kansas's search for huge oil and gas deposits is Mayor Brandon Farney of Kiowa, Kansas. He's been right in the middle of the boom going on in South Central Kansas and can describe for us what's been happening there. Mayor Farney, thank you so much for taking some time with us. It's good to have you.
You're very welcome.
Well, to what extent has all of this oil and gas exploration changed your town, Mayor, and the surrounding community for that matter?
Well, it gives us quite a positive outlook. It wasn't a very long time ago that things in this community and in this area were taking a pretty major downturn. And this has sure brought some people in and brought some hope for the entire area.
And to what extent? I mean, how excited are people? And this is such a dramatic change from the way things have been in Kiowa. I'm wondering if you're getting some kickback from longtime residents who aren't crazy about it.
Oh, there's always a little bit of that. But the basic general feeling, as far as I can tell, in the area is very positive. Of course, there's always positives and negatives that come about. But, you know, we've got a lot of increased traffic on our roads and our highways, but our businesses in town are the ones who are, I would say, the biggest beneficiaries of some of this. We've got a new restaurant in town, for example. There's just been several things that have happened on the positive. And you have to understand that if we get just a small influx in the city of Kiowa, you know, an increase of 10 or 20 people, that's a huge impact for us, where it, you know, in the major metropolitan area, 10 or 20 people, it doesn't affect the economic status like it would in a community of our size.
Well, how many additional people do you have in Kiowa today than you did, say, 3-4 years ago?
Well, our census was done just not very long ago, a year or two ago. We were just right around the 1,000-person mark. As far as actual increased people in town, probably not a lot, you know, maybe 15 or 20 extra people. But they bring their children to school, and they use our hospitals and eat at our restaurants. And so we are seeing this influence. I know you can't hardly book a motel room in the entire area. They've been booked for quite some time, and trying to find a house to buy or live in is almost an impossibility right now.
And there's construction of a new hotel going on, I believe, in Kiowa. Do I have that right, Mayor?
You've got that right. That's something that, you know, none of us ever expected 3 or 4 years ago. So that's a major improvement.
You know, to what extent is all this speculative in terms of the potential for an oil boom here? Or how are you looking at this? Are you fairly confident this thing is going to work out for Kansas and there will be a boom? Or what's your own state of mind here, Mayor?
Well, we have been cautiously embracing this. We've been very hopeful, trying to get information, you know, as to how things are coming along from the oil companies and different representatives. is very tough. They're very vague about what they're finding and what their expectations are. And quite frankly, I think it's because they really don't know at this time. We've tried to help them as much as we can by kind of unifying things down here, making the steps a little easier for them to come in and do their work and their business, and have tried to be accommodating anyway.
To what extent are you left to read body language, and do you do that as mayor who's hopeful this thing's going to work out?
Well, if you look around the countryside, I think, it speaks highly above anything that you could verbally express. Out here before, you'd go outside of town and it was dark. It was black at night. And you go outside of town now and there are literally lights everywhere from all this, all the drilling and exploring and people running up and down the back roads. And so I think it is here. I don't think it's going to be an explosive thing like they found up north. That's what they keep telling us. This is a lot slower process, and they're expecting it to drag out longer and not have the huge, huge boom like they saw up in North Dakota.
You know, during the first half of our show today, Mayor, we were talking with Steve Everly from The Star, and Steve was saying that he believes that at least in some time in 2013, perhaps later in the year, we're going to have a pretty good idea if this boom is going to pan out for Kansas or not. What is your own timetable when it comes to when you expect to find out if indeed this thing is on for good?
Well, we have been told next spring, next summer, next fall for the last 2 years, we would know something. So I'm still hopeful, but been down that road before.
How is South Central Kansas accommodating all these workers? Where are they living? Where are they staying? And what's been happening to the traffic coming through Kiowa, Kansas?
Well, as far as I know, they're staying wherever they can find to stay, rental houses, motel rooms, tents, whatever they can figure out to stay in.
Even tents, Mayor?
Not in this city. I have seen that in some towns south of us. This boom kind of started in Oklahoma, and it's kind of coming up through here now. So down in Alva, you could see campers and trailers and anything you can imagine down there that people could stay in.
For so many years, I'm guessing for a town like yours that younger folks have, you know, risen up, gone to high school, and then pretty much left to go elsewhere. I'm wondering if you're seeing a reversal of that with the oil boom that's taking shape down there.
We're very hopeful that we see this reversal. As far as actually seeing it and being able to put my thumb on it right now, I can't say that I can.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we are definitely trying for and looking forward to.
What's the prospects moving forward for Kiowa? And can you tell us what your town has been based on in terms of its own economy the last 2 years, Mayor, and what its prospects were going to be if this oil boom had not come along?
Well, this whole entire area down in here, we are an agricultural-based community area, mostly small grains, you know, wheat and soybeans and corn and milo and things of this nature. So as you are probably aware of, the farming times have been bleak for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, I attended some meetings about 12 to 14 years ago, and they had some analysts on there, and they were saying in this area, in the next 15 to 20 years at that time, they were expecting us to be down in the entire county to one hospital, hopefully a grocery store, and we may not even had a school in the county. We may have had to join a neighboring county. And I can tell you at this time, Kiowa has its own hospital. We've got our own schools, and we've got all of our services are still intact here. So, and this is going to be a major supporter of this. Matter of fact, we're getting ready to build a new hospital in town.
Hmm. Was that scheduled, or was that because of the oil presence?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to get this done for several years, and I think the planning, this has just helped the planning.
I'm just wondering, Mayor, have you been up to North Dakota to see what Todd Melby has seen in his journalistic work up there the last few months? Have you seen what's happened in North Dakota?
No, have not been up there, but would love an invitation to go.
Steve Everly, some Kansans have been up there, right?
That's right. Several Kansans, state officials and local officials went up there for a visit and spent a few days up there, and they came back. And,
did it scare them, or were they encouraged?
Well, yeah, actually, I think it did scare them a little bit. I mean, you know, they heard stories about, you know, people making six incomes, living in homeless shelters, and restaurants had to close because they couldn't find workers, or they opened at 4 p.m. in the afternoon because the only people that could find the work was were high school students. So they were thinking about this big rush, what they were going to do. And I think but I think when they came back, they're kind of in an interesting situation now, is that they're increasingly confident that there will be a boom here, but they're not quite sure when to start making all these investments to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of in this dilemma here. And you see this a lot in talking to state officials and also some local communities, is when do we start making these big investments on, you know, on roads and improving bridges and building more motels and housing and whatever. And I guess the fear is if something did happen and it didn't work out, then they're going to be left with this major mm-hmm. investment. But as the mayor spoke of, you know, you're starting to see a lot more action, including the motel in his town, which the people there are spending, investing about $800,000 of their own money, two people, to build it.
Mayor Farney of Kiowa, Kansas, are you seeing a lot of that hesitancy as you get around to the business owners and the business leadership in your town?
Well, sure. Anybody that's going to lay that kind of money on the table is, on an unsure future, is going to be reserved about it. So everybody's just being real cautious right now, and everybody wants to be ready. But like you said, you just never know when to pull the trigger.
Todd Melby, the independent producer and journalist who's been covering the scene in North Dakota, what advice would you give to Mayor Farney at this point as he sort of tries to navigate these very tricky waters in terms of what's happening in South Central Kansas?
I think it's a struggle that mayors in Western North Dakota have also faced, is when do you invest? You know, in Western North Dakota, the boom just came super, super fast, and so they, you know, folks really didn't have time to prepare. And probably the biggest critique of the oil boom in Western North Dakota has been, we wish it would just slow down so we could catch our breath. And unfortunately, you don't really have any control over that. It's all the cards are in the oil company's hands. They make deals with, in the case of North Dakota law, there are mineral rights owners who control the mineral rights underneath the ground, and they sign a deal with the mineral rights owners for X number of years. It's usually a short period of time, like 3 years perhaps, and they have three years to get the oil flowing out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty tight time frame, and so everyone's highly motivated. The mineral rights owners are motivated to sell so they can get the money, and the oil companies are motivated to drill because they don't get paid until the oil reaches the refineries. So everything is all motivated by cash.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly.
But Todd, Mayor Farney is describing sort of an uptick in activity in Kiowa, Kansas. I guess one message you might have for him is he ain't seen nothing yet, at least potentially here, right?
Potentially, right. And that's the thing about North Dakota as well. They don't know how long-term they should plan. It's a very unpredictable business. I mean, unlike somebody who moves to a town to open up a factory, you can usually bet that once they say they're going to open it and it's going to be open for, you would think, a decade at least, you could sort of plan for that. But with an oil boom or natural gas boom, they come in and they just start doing it, and it grows or it doesn't grow.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the potential for a mega oil boom in south central Kansas and what it might mean for that area as well as the entire state. We're visiting with Steve Everly from The Star, who's covered this issue. Todd Melby, an independent producer and journalist who's been covering the boom in North Dakota. And from south central Kansas this morning, Mayor Brandon Farney of Kiowa, Kansas. Steve Everly, tell us a little more about this this formation where this large oil deposit may be stored, the Mississippi Lime Formation. What is that exactly, and where is it situated?
Well, it's situated in northern Oklahoma into southwestern or south central Kansas, and then it kind of juts northwest into the rest of Kansas. And it's a formation. It's limestone. It's a formation that geologists say was created around 330 million years ago. It varies in depth and dimensions depending where you are in Kansas. It can be as far down as a mile, and as thick as around 1,700 feet. And I guess one of the things that they're now sort of sorting out is that it varies considerably in Kansas, and so they're getting a better idea of the dimensions and where to drill. But it's, as someone said just a little bit ago, Oklahoma has had more experience in drilling on this now, and now it's moved into Kansas. And the oil companies are saying that even though it's different, they are seeing some production rates are pretty close to Oklahoma, which gives further evidence that this will be pretty significant because northern Oklahoma has been pretty productive.
But what's in greater quantities down there, do they think, Steve, oil or natural gas?
Actually, that's an interesting question because if you talk to oil guys, they generally like to go where there's more oil. And it's starting to look as though oil may be a little below 50% in the Mississippian lime in Kansas, which would normally be an issue and would be of less interest to oil companies. But one of the things the Mississippian lime has to go in is relatively shallow compared to, say, to North Dakota. And the drilling is much cheaper. You can do a well in Kansas for about $3.5 million, where it can be $8 million or more in North Dakota. And the consequence of that is that even if the production and if the oil is not quite as great in Kansas, it's still very economical. And the oil companies that have done the most drilling in Kansas are getting rates of return around 50% so far, which is
pretty good.
Very, very good.
Yes. Todd Melby in North Dakota, how deep will the drillers go up there?
They'll go usually 2 miles deep, and
wow,
sometimes as much as 2 miles over as well.
And very simply speaking, Todd, how do you drill down 2 miles? How do you do that?
Very carefully.
Yeah, I guess.
It's super, super specific, super scientific. As a matter of fact, I just interviewed a mud logger, and a mud logger's job is to analyze the mud, which is really just a mix of sort of goop and soil and rock. So her job is to look under a microscope to make sure that as they drill, she checks it every 30 feet to make sure that they're going where they're supposed to go. So it's the technology is there where you can be super specific within as much as 10 feet or so, I believe. And that allows you to get exactly to where you need to go. You send explosives down, you loosen up the rock, and out comes the oil.
That's amazing. Steve Everly, the oil isn't easily retrievable. In some cases, companies are using this controversial process known as fracking. What is fracking exactly, and why is it so controversial?
Well, the fracking is that once they do the drilling and the horizontal drilling, which goes out, say, a mile or so.
Horizontal drilling.
Yeah. And that
parallel
is really,
to the earth.
Yeah, yeah. And that is really as what has made these formations so productive and available. But after they drill, then they come in and with high pressure, water, chemicals, and to fracture this rock and then to release the oil and natural gas. Now, it is controversial, although not as controversial as in Kansas as in some states like Pennsylvania where this has happened. But there are concerns that it could contaminate groundwater. The EPA is doing a study now, which is completed next year, which is probably going to likely be the definitive work. The other issue on the fracking, and actually it's a problem in Kansas now, is there's a large amount of water that it's used, in each of these wells, like more than 1 million gallons. And during a time of drought, this is an issue. So I think probably for the oil producers in the state now, concerns about having enough water and having the water rights is at the top of their list.
Mayor Brandon Farney of Kiowa, Kansas, what concerns are you picking up about the use of fracking and the potential damage to groundwater and the use of so much water during a time of drought to get the job done there? What are you hearing?
Well, that is a major concern. They are, in this area, attempting to reuse this water from one well to the next to, conserve the water and use it more than just one time. I know there's a local community here up north of us that is selling water to them. Our drinking water, we have done some well testing to see if our water levels in the ground are dropping or being contaminated, and so far everything has passed and everything is looking okay, but that is something that we are staying on top of, and it is a concern for us.
Up in North Dakota, Todd Melby, there's some experience with fracking. What has been the experience there? How controversial is the practice, and what's it done to the amount of water during a time of drought up there?
It's not very controversial in western North Dakota, and I think that has to do with the political climate. It's folks vote Republican. Romney took 75% of the vote in the biggest oil-producing county in western North Dakota. I mean, this is an issue that seems to go along political lines. Liberals are opposed to it. Conservatives are in favor of it. And so it's pretty minimal opposition in western North Dakota. The only opposition environmentally to drilling in western North Dakota has been around natural sites, such as Theodore Roosevelt's Elkhorn Ranch, which is close to the Teddy Roosevelt National Park there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also been some opposition to drilling near particular buttes or potential Indian burial mounds.
Is some of this, Todd, some of the lack of reticence, I guess, because just to be blunt here, this is all happening in a fairly remote part of North Dakota. It's not heavily populated, at least it didn't used to be. Does that sort of play into all this? And people think, well, at least we can get something out of the land and we don't need to worry about fracking and groundwater because we're so far away from the major population centers.
I don't know. That's a really good question. I think it could be that. It could also be politically, and it could also be the fact that with oil, you go a lot deeper, so you're further away from the water table. And so potentially you have less of a problem. I'm not sure exactly.
Mayor Farney, do you have any personal issues with fracking yourself?
Not really. Like he said, they are so deep with this fracking. Our groundwater level is around 90 to 100 feet is where we get our good water from. So, and they're dealing and doing their work at about, 5,000 feet. So, so far we have really not had any problems with it. And kind of like he said, we are mostly Republicans in this area, and that just really has not been an issue.
Steve Everly, again, you cover all this for the newspaper. How much outcry have you sensed in Kansas over fracking? Because I guess, to be honest, I haven't heard very much, at least not as much as I expected.
No, very little. I mean, the Sierra Club in Kansas has come out against this, and they've done some things. But if you talk to landowners and others, you just don't hear much opposition. I give a little bit of that to, Kansas has had an oil industry for a century or more, and I think they're a little more comfortable with this, dealing with these companies and with the energy industry overall. And also the people, the land that this is being drilled on, the landowners are getting a pretty big economic shot from this.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't hear a whole lot of complaints from them so far.
Sierra Club hasn't weighed in on this, as far as you know.
Oh,
Steve,
the Sierra Club has weighed in on it, yes, mm-hmm. and they have that they've voiced real concerns about this and that there are problems. But beyond that, I haven't heard a whole lot of other options. Others. There was a conference in Hutchinson in December where about 500 people came together to talk about this. And except for some concerns about potential water shortages, the whole issue of fracking didn't come up once.
Bottom line, Mayor Farney, we're going to know a whole lot more a year from now. Do I have that right?
Well, that's what our hope is.
Well, I want to thank you all. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Mayor Brandon Farney from Kiowa, Kansas. Mayor, good luck with your work there, and we'll stay in touch with you and see what happens, okay?
Well, we sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Steve Everly from the Kansas City Star. Steve, it's always good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Todd Melby, who's an independent producer and journalist who's been covering the North Dakota scene. His work will be on our website, kcur.org. Todd, thank you so much for your time today, too.
Sure thing. You're welcome.
You can find more information about our broadcast at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.